Hi, Praveen. Good to have you on. The electrification of agriculture, I'd say Monarch's leading the way. So thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me, Jared. It's great to be here and to talk about all the progress that we have made.
Yeah, I'm going to hand it over to Gaudi in a moment for the sponsorship, but Monarch just had some pretty big news come out. I guess, was that in the end of 2021 or 2022 that all the funding came through?
Yeah, it was at the end of last year. Very excited to share that we are continuing to add more investors on board, and not just financial investors, but strategic investors. We have always believed that agriculture is an ecosystem. The farmer should not be tied into just one product or company. So we need a whole host of companies to come along with us. So with that in mind, super happy to announce that Case New Holland Industrial, CNH Industrial, is a part of our investment portfolio. So they actually reinvested in Monarch in our Series B. Also have Trimble joined this round. And a number of other investors, totaling $60+ million, which brings our total fundraising very close to $100 million over the last couple of years. This is not the last of it, but more importantly, and the reason I'm really excited, is some of our partnerships that we're starting to announce. We have already publicly announced our electrification licensing agreement with CNH Industrial, which means you'll start to see Monarch technology in CNH electric tractors in the very near future. So these are the kind of things that really are accelerating the electrification of farming.
Wow, I've got quite the list of questions, Praveen. So we're going to cover it all. Before we do it, Gaudi, handing over to you. We've got a list of sponsors. We got to give a shout out that are helping us put this show on.
Yes, we do. And so we'll start off with Zero Knox. Zero Knox is a global leader in electric powertrain solutions, microgrids, and clean technology. They provide a platform for clean energy technology to come to market through powertrain solutions, development partnerships, and electrification kit solutions for conversions, all powered by Zero Knox. Their mission is to empower communities through sustainable innovation as they partner with some of the world's leading OEMs to solve challenges across multiple continents with cleaner and higher performing technology, empowering a clean, innovative, and higher performing future without compromise. Learn more at zeronox.com. And next up, we also have Mino Carbon. Mino works closely with customers to make biochar from their waste streams. This biochar is then used to increase agricultural yields, to improve forest productivity, or to store carbon in materials such as concrete or asphalt. Through the production and increased use of biochar, Mino's goal is to accelerate the rate at which humanity removes carbon from the atmosphere, improves the health of soil and water resources, and in the process, creates the good jobs of the future. Learn more at minocarbon.com or check out their Crownsman Agriculture interview with Mino CEO Thor Kalistad. And last but not least, we've got SolarSet. SolarSet has launched pre-assembled ground-mounted solar systems, including the innovative SolarSet Fold. Their solar systems will power your residential and commercial property, and they also ship worldwide. Talk to their team to learn if a grid tie or off-grid with battery backup solar system is right for your application. You can visit them at solarset.com for more information.
Thank you very much, Gaudi. Okay, Praveen, you're the CEO and the founder of Monarch Tractor. So much to cover. I hope I can do your company justice for what you're doing and what you're accomplishing. I want to circle back just quickly to the funding. I didn't realize, so this was actually the $61 million that came in, that was actually a company reinvesting, which is quite a nod to what you've accomplished.
Exactly. A lot of our investors who invested in our Series A at the beginning of last year came back at the end of last year to reinvest. So again, that's a vote of confidence on not just our technology, but also the progress that we're making, year on year. So CNH Industrial, BST, almost every one of our early investors has reinvested last year, along with new investors who are starting to see the potential of the technology, not just nationwide here in America, Jared, but also global. Our lead investor is Astanor. They invested because they are specifically interested in food and agriculture from a European perspective. They're starting to see some of the challenges US farmers are facing, also being a global issue.
What do you think? I mean, there's a lot that stands out, but what do you think is what have you done between the first round and now to gain that confidence of investor? Because it's one thing to gain investment at the beginning when the you know, when you have an idea and a concept and goals. It's another thing that round B is that's a huge nod to a company. So what is it? What are those landmarks that you hit that you really think instilled that confidence?
Yeah, the big difference is even though the company and the technology has been around, our first patents were filed, you know, back in 2017 timeframe. The technology was developed in the 2015 to 2017 timeframe. And the Monarch as an entity was in stealth mode until 2019. And once we first came out and showcased what an electric automated tractor looks like and should look like, that's what led to that first round of funding. But the interesting thing and the difference between the first round and the second round is basically market traction. The fact that we have hundreds of farmers, both large and small, expressing committed interest in acquiring our tractor, not just one, two of them. A number of farmers have placed reservations for like 5+ tractors in some cases, is a nod to the fact that we have a product that meets the needs of the farmer. Mm-hmm. And that's what really convinced, the investors to come back in and new investors to join the portfolio as well.
Let's talk about the tractor itself for a little bit then, because meeting the needs of the tractor, the model you developed is arguably, I think, the highest demand tractor on the market. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. So our focus right from day one has been very much about, let's start off with fruits and vegetables. What is referred to commonly here in the US as the specialty market. So specialty market tractors are often smaller, but globally, the platform that we have and the horsepower class that we are in is the highest by volume in terms of unit volumes. So, we are looking at like millions of these tractors that are produced and deployed worldwide. And our vision always was to start with addressing the needs of the fruits and vegetables farmers in the US, but then have a platform that is scalable globally. So that's why we are excited about the class that we are in. And very often we still do get feedback that, hey, this cannot do, the work that our 300 horsepower, 250 horsepower, 200 horsepower tractor does. And that's true. But again, for us, our initial focus is very much on the fruits and vegetables, where both the tractor class, but also the challenges that the fruits and vegetables farmers are facing is at a completely different scale, because they have 3 times the labor of what you see for what we call the cash crops, right? The 3 times the labor means that the pain that the farmers are facing in fruits and vegetables is an order of magnitude higher. So we are really focused on addressing those needs. So our tractor is not a $500,000 tractor, right? Our tractor is a $60,000 tractor.
I see. So when you started, now with that decision, how did you get to that? Was it based on market research or was it pretty clear from the very beginning, This is the model that we want to get into the market, or was it ever considered to go with the larger scale ones to start?
Yeah, no, we spent a lot of time looking at the needs of the market and also looking at where the opportunities are and also looking at impact. So when we talk about sustainability impact and the needs, again, we're very close to, hearing and feeling the needs of the California farmers, who are struggling with, sustainability demands, who are struggling with labor shortages, et cetera. So after polling, all of the farmers here and realizing that their needs and their demands were very much aligned with what the global farmer was facing, right? Every farmer around the world has a labor challenge these days. Every farmer around the world is being asked by their buyers to provide more data on emissions and to explain their sustainability footprint. Right. So these things were happening. So when we started looking at that market, we felt that the pain points were very high in the specialty fruits and vegetables market, just because of the amount of labor that they need. And also the fact that technology solutions were not being targeted towards them because it was seen as a niche market where the volumes were low, the margins were low, right? All the big equipment companies, if you look at their tractor sizes, right? Even the recent announcements, you know, the tractor sizes are very much catering towards the large farm operations, not the specialty tractors. So we wanted to make a difference with the specialty tractors and then make a difference around the world. So that's why all of that research basically led us to the conclusion that if we can build a high-tech tractor that answers the demands of the fruits and vegetables farmers, and if that class is the most commonly used tractor platform in the world, we can really increase the volumes of the tractor side and then bring the cost down and make high-tech available to the farmers, right, at a much lower cost just because of the volumes that we can produce this in. So that's always been our philosophy and mindset, and the market research backed it up, and the customers' answers also backed it up. Yeah.
That the digital transformation side of it, can we talk a little bit about the capabilities? Like I go on, even on your website, going on to your homepage, I'm seeing these, the tractor being used in different applications. Hopefully we can bring some of it up. So what all, I mean, it's not just doing an operation, but it's also collecting data and it's electric and it's all these things. Can you sort of give the scope of what this unit actually is capable of?
Yeah. So for us, when we talk to farmers, it's a very straightforward value proposition. Number one, it's electric, which means, and it does everything your existing tractor in this class does, which means you're seeing diesel savings. Number two, we can elevate your tractor driver. We can take him off the seat and have him manage 6 to 8 tractors, right? We are using technology to make it easy for the tractor driver to manage a fleet, not using technology to say you should hire a more skilled person. Mm-hmm. So that results in, you know, in labor efficiency and savings, right? So your tractor driver now, you know, can do more and can do other jobs on the farm and watch a fleet of 6 to 8 tractors. So those two things result in tremendous savings. But also the fact that our tractor and we have sensors that enable the driver optional feature set means that while our tractor is doing operations, we can also provide real-time alerts and longer-term efficiency recommendations back to the farmer. It's a logical unit to do that, right? Because the tractor is the one that goes down that row a number of times. You don't have to pay for an additional drone run or an airplane data collection or satellite data collection. The tractor is already there doing the work. So those are the three components, Jared, when we talk to our farmers. But it starts off with electric. It starts off with how can we make their, you know, their existing drivers more efficient in managing fleets. And then also, you know, do the same thing that a driver does when he's on the tractor seat, which is, you know, he's keeping an eye on not just the operation that's happening behind him, but also seeing what's happening, you know, at the plant level. And then relay that back to the farm operations manager or the owner of the farm.
Just going back to the beginning. So when was the first unit put out in operations?
Yeah. Our first electric tractor has been out, which is what we call our alpha model, right? Was a very small electric tractor that has been in testing since 2017. And then we built our beta tractor, which showcased both, you know, electric and automated and smart data, you know, in 2019. And then now we have our pilot series tractor. And as we have gone through these iterations, we have collected a lot of feedback from farmers and change the tractor so that we are taking their, you know, their feedback into account. And now we have our pilot series tractor, and now we have our next generation tractor coming out, which will be the production design and then heading out to production.
Right.
So we have like the longest history of electric vehicle development out in the farm, and not just here, but also globally, right? Our first alpha tractor, we collected feedback in Asia to see what the Asian farmer wants. And now with our pilot series tractors, again, we're out in the field constantly working with farmers, with their drivers and their implements to get feedback on not just our tractor, but also how our tractor integrates into their operations.
How did you go about building a team to put all this together, you know, over this period of time? I mean, I'm sure, you know, like any company, people do will come and go a bit, but what's sort of that core that you're looking for people while you're trying to get to this end goal of I mean, really transforming an industry?
Exactly. And what we look for when we bring people to join our team, Jared, is the mission focus, right? And our mission focus has always been farmer first. Like, how do we provide solutions that make sense for the farmer? And the second part of that is sustainability. How do we do that in such a way that it's long-term sustainable for the health of the soil, for the health of the farmer, and the community? So those are the two areas. So when we look for people who really feel an emotional connection to that mission of, you know, of making our food ecosystem more profitable for the farmers, number one, and more sustainable. Because without the profitability, the sustainability is not going to come.
That's right, yeah.
So that's our mission focus. So to answer your question, in the early days, it was quite challenging because we were trying to hire the best talent pool, right, who had a connection to the food ecosystem. And then we would take them away from their comfortable chairs and desks and everything else that you see in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And put them in a tent on a farm, right? And say, guys, we're going to be here for the next week. You know?
And they're so looking around. Feel the pain. Where?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but off late, right? And even now, a part of our recruiting process is we take all the people out to the farm.
Mm.
It doesn't matter whether you're in the administration side at Monarch or whether you're on the engineering side or you're on the testing side. All of these people get a chance to see the farm, see the tractor operating on the farm, and understand why what we're doing is very important.
Mm.
So to answer your question, it is quite challenging. This is not something for every engineer.
Yeah.
But for the right kind of engineers who really want to make a difference, right, like at a global scale and to change the food ecosystem, I think this is the right one. And for the right kind of engineers who want to get their feet dirty and they're not afraid of getting their laptop wet and dirty out in the mud, this is the right kind of, right kind of job. So we try very hard to find the right people. It's not easy, but we're very selective about that as well.
I have seen it in work where there's types of people that they just haven't been out. Let's say they haven't been out in the field, like they've never done it in their life. In my case, coming from the heavy industry side, more like, construction, mining sites and that sort of thing. But then you see some people that just as a personality, they're so passionate and their willpower is so great. Someone that you might think would actually be able to handle it once they get out into the real world application, there it's not for them. But then someone else will step up that they just haven't had the opportunity. Have you seen that? Mm-hmm. I mean, you must sort of see a different side of people when you bring them out into that tent for a week out in the middle of an agriculture setting.
Yeah, most definitely, right? And we have seen people that we initially thought, oh my God, this person is not going to cut it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually flourish and turn into some of our, rock star team members, whether it's on the sales side, whether it's on the marketing side, whether it's on the engineering side or administration side. But to answer your question, we've also seen people that we thought, will flourish in this environment and it's just too hard. There's always an easier way to make money if that's the primary motivator, especially out here in the Bay Area, right? So we're not afraid to, wish them well and, have them explore the other adventures. But I think the question that you're asking, Jared, is a great point. I think we need a new kind of mindset, and that comes from a balance in the team between the experience side and also new people who are new to this field working together. If we just have one or the other, we are not going to see the kind of accelerated innovation that we want at Monarch. And so that's what we try to find a balance of. We want people who understand farming. We want people who relate to this kind of technology on the electrification side, on some of the smart automated features, et cetera. But at the same time, we want people to come in with a clear mindset and say, how do I solve this farmer's problem, right? So it's that mixture of both those people working together that's the magic.
You mentioned engineers a couple of times, and I'm just curious, putting this technology together, the design of the tractor, but also the integration of technology. Is it just engineers that do it, or how does that actually all physically come together as an end product? Like, what kind of people? I mean, you must have all different. Is it just engineers, or are there other specialists that need to come in?
No, I think it takes a whole ecosystem, right? So, and our product development cycle runs all the way from technology side where the engineers contribute, but all the way down to new tractor drivers, right? We bring in tractor drivers, both who have existing experience on the farm, but also new ones who are probably currently working in construction or they're working other skilled labor jobs. They are a part of our testing team. So we have a dedicated testing team. We have our own dedicated farm out here, and it's basically the whole team working together. So at the end of the day, if our technology is clever, but if the end user cannot use it, then it's a fail.
Yeah.
So, and we're also not afraid of putting our tractor into actual tractor drivers' hands at other farms and saying, hey, use this, right? And to be honest, there are a number of times when they've come back and said, hey, this does not work the way I want it to, or I'm having a problem here, or yes, you think it should happen this way, but it doesn't.
Right.
So we take all that feedback in. So to answer your question, it's not just the engineering side. The magic is getting that whole ecosystem working together out on the farm, right? So the engineer has to be on the farm, but also the tractor driver has to be there, and there has to be somebody enabling that conversation for us to make that technology better.
Well, that kind of dovetails nicely into the integration question, because these farms, I mean, if they've got, I don't know, I mean, I'm not an expert in it, but let's say they've got 50 tractors, and now they're going to buy 8 from you to sort of test them out in their in their environment. How does that work when you have, you know, one person running 8 tractors, but then you have 40 other tractors that are being manually operated, or maybe there's a mixture of manually, and then they've got other kinds that are half automated, all these different things that are going on. So how do you integrate all that in?
Yeah, no, definitely. And we see that as a process, Jared. So we can't expect the farmer to literally, quote unquote, bet the farm, right, on our technology. Right. So we see it as an integration. That's why it's important that the existing people play a role in this transition. So to answer your question, if they have 40 tractors or 50 tractors right now, and they buy 8 of our tractors, it's important that their existing people can use them. They can run existing operations the way they have done it, and just integrate our equipment into existing operations without fundamental changes, right? A number of our competitors, when they make these unique robots, they're like, oh, don't worry, now it's as a service, and one of our personnel will be on the field with you and testing all of these things, and now you're asking for operational changes from the farmer's standpoint.
Right.
We are trying to avoid that, and we are saying, hey, remove one or two of your tractors, plug our tractors in, and let's do the operation the same way with your people, with your implements. And as you get confidence, we do expect them to transition more and more of their tractors over to Monarch tractors. So that's our philosophy. And it's going to take 3 or 4 years for the farm to, you know, to transition 50, 70, 80, 90% of their tractors over.
Yeah, I don't want to let you just said just sort of slip past, because there is a lot of that model going on. I've had people on the show on talking about that model, where it's sort of that service model, and it's sort of a restructuring of operations.
Yeah,
you probably you would have had the option to go that way.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was a discussion in your team. Why did you choose this route as opposed to going that sort of service, you know?
Yeah.
Not rental, I forget what they what's the term they use for that when they do the
It's commonly farming as a service or robots as a service.
Yeah.
Right. So for us also, don't get me wrong, at some point people will be able to, you know, rent our tractor, use our tractor as a service model eventually, and that will be a component of what Monarch offers. But we were very clear that we had to set a high bar. The high bar is the tractor is a key component of farm operations today around the world. And we need to give the farmer the confidence that our tractor can basically replace their existing diesel tractor that requires a lot of skilled driver hours on it.
Mm-hmm.
So if the bar is that, then we have to like kind of come out with a product that meets the cost requirements, the operations requirements, and the people requirements, right? So we set that high bar for ourselves. And that was the reason why we said, if we don't succeed on that, as a service allows us to skirt a few of those things, right? If we do it as a service, I don't need to worry about if the existing labor can actually operate our tractor or not.
Right.
We have our people doing it, right? Yes, it lowers the bar. But from a tech standpoint and from an adoption standpoint, that's also not great. And especially when it comes to peak times, everybody wants the tractor. And if you're as a service, how do we scale it? How do we get utilization up, right? We're going to be limited on that side. So from a product perspective, we have set a very high bar for ourselves, saying that we should be able to convince a farmer that they should replace their existing diesel tractor with our tractor. Mm-hmm. You know, apples to apples there.
Right.
And then, you know, if we can meet that target, then we have something of value here.
Right.
So that's how we looked at it, Jared, to be honest. And like I said, as a service has a is not a bad thing, right? It has its place. It was just not a path that we wanted to chase down. We wanted a higher bar.
Well, there must be a huge market potential for also smaller operators as well. I mean, have you got a lot of interest from people that just have one or two tractors? I would think that'd be, I mean, especially like in areas like California and there must be a demand for that as well, isn't there?
Yes, there's been a lot of interest from the smaller farm operations, the smaller farmers as well, who just have one or two tractors. And that's, again, because of the size of our tractor and how easy it's to operate and the electric nature of it. But also we are hoping to transform the small farmers' operations, right? If that small farmer, you know, might be operating the tractor for mowing, if we can kind of automate that mowing side where he programs it once and then we can do the mowing, right, at night in a quiet manner.
Right.
When the safety considerations are much more controlled, you know, when it's we're giving him some time back on the mowing side, et cetera.
Right.
So those are the kind of things that the small farmers really find a lot of value in the Monarch tractor as well.
Well, I was curious about this. Depending on their needs, because I can't imagine you can cover everything. So can they retrofit it, or over years, is the technology just going to continue to expand to offer more? How are you sort of, for lack of a better word, customizing it to their needs, like based on if they need spray or they're needing it to mow or whatever their need, or collecting certain amounts of data or certain types of data? How do you sort of juggle all of that?
Yeah, and that's the beauty of like having a traditional tractor interface, Jared. Like if a farmer looks at a tractor from the back, he won't be able to tell that it's an electric automated tractor apart from the roof, right? Because we have the same hydraulic connections, we have the same PTO, we have the same three-point hitch, right? And all of those are controllable for us, you know, from the automation side. So once you program them or once you use them, the tractor driver can jump off the thing and, you know, we can repeat those operations just the way he wants them. So right. To answer your question, if the farmer has customized his mower or sprayer or has a custom implement that is currently, you know, being pulled with a drawbar or a PTO shaft or run by hydraulics, you know, we get to do all of that, right? So that's the huge advantage of keeping the tractor platform as is from an interface standpoint. Also, if they want to customize it, right, as long as the customization is on the implement side, it's very easy, right? If they want to customize the tractor, then we need to be a part of that conversation just because of the automation side. So, but we're already deploying smart features that allow us to account for any new implements that they attach, right? And still be able to maintain these operations from a safety standpoint. To answer your question, our focus initially is definitely on mowing, it's on spraying, it's on hauling, it's on weeding. Mm-hmm. Those are the four operations that out of the box, right, that we want to support for farmers. Right. But nothing stopping them from attaching their implement to the standard interface at the back and then running the tractor, right, just as any other tractor.
Right. I just want to quickly go back to that engineering side, because you had to design a tractor and then you had to make it electric. It must have been quite a process those first couple of years. Just, I mean, in manufacturing, you know, the suspension system, the frame, like there's all these nuts and bolts that you got to design while you're designing this sort of futuristic way of doing things.
Right.
I mean, that day one, let's go with day one. Yeah. Is actually we're going to start designing it. Well, I mean, how do you even start the conversation? It's a little beyond my pay grade, and that's why I'm asking.
No, but again, that's where the team comes into play. You know, it's a very from a leadership standpoint, it's an experienced team that's done these kind of very complex devices before, right? So if you look at our chief technology officer, Dr. Zachary Omohundro, right? He's done everything from electric cars to automated planters to electric aircraft projects, et cetera. So the technology that we're bringing in, you know, is experienced technology that's right. been proven in other areas, whether it's aerospace, whether it's automotive or agriculture. And we're bringing that to our product, number one. Number two is even on the digital and autonomy side, you know, we're bringing the latest and greatest technology, you know, from, if you think about our chief digital officer is Chris Whitney, right? He's had decades of experience in automation, decades of experience in data and connectivity. So when we say, hey, how do we make an automated tractor work where there's no connectivity and sometimes we lose even the GPS signal, especially in specialty agriculture, right? We have an experienced team that solved these problems before that we're bringing to the table. But Jared, you're absolutely right. The way we went about it was we had to reinvent the tractor from the inside out, which means all the nuts and bolts had to work. At the same time, we had to make sure that the tractor did everything that existing tractor did, right? So for example, making sure that the hydraulics worked, the three-point hitches worked, the PTO worked, you know, at different speeds, and have it be smart and automated to where an existing driver who's not familiar with technology can use it.
Yeah.
And that's our goal. And that's our difference as well from the big tractor companies in how we approach the problem.
Well, I was thinking, you talk about the hydraulics. I was just thinking, you know, you could have the most amazing tractor. And if a farmer went to make an adjustment and the hydraulic system wasn't right, he could care less if the electric system was amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How good the cameras are at that time is not going to give us any leeway. Right.
So. He'll still be hurling his wrench at the ground. What has been the most challenging through this whole period? You know, has it been design, funding, team building? You know, when you sort of look back, I mean, there's a very bright future ahead. And I think that round B of funding is a testament to that. But looking back, what is a stretch of time that you went, this is a challenge?
Yeah. I mean, my philosophy has always been it's the next stretch that's going to be the most challenging. So we always need to be prepared for it.
Right. Yeah.
But honestly speaking, Jared, I mean, the ag industry and farmers are a very demanding customer.
Right.
Right. In terms of, if you look at how ag equipment is used, just because of the nature of the industry, right? It's very time constrained. We don't have the kind of margins that other industries sometimes have. So farmers have to do a lot with very little. So then what happens on the equipment side is they make the equipment, they push the limits of what the equipment capabilities are constantly. So for us, our challenge is how do we make sure that we build a robust, reliable tractor that when we give it to a farmer will exceed his expectations,
right?
Is the biggest challenge we have. That has been the biggest challenge for the last year and a half, and that will continue to be a challenge going forward. But that's our goal. Our goal is not to say, hey, look at this wow technology, right? It's about saying, here's the tech that's going to make a difference to your bottom line and is going to exceed your expectations. So that's a high bar when it comes to farmers.
You know, and I can honestly say on this interview, and even when I first talked to you, I noticed that shift or that approach that you had, because I mean, I come from the nuts and bolts world. So when I'm in a conversation, and it probably makes it in some way qualifies me to be the host, because I need it sort of brought down to a level where other people can understand so I can understand it. And I've talked to people that they're approaching it as in, we're basically going to turn your whole world upside down. Yep. And people that are living in, they're making a living off this, and some of the living's quite hard. I mean, farming is notoriously a very challenging thing. Yeah. And they're not dealing with these huge margins. You know, so you come in and you're going to say, yeah, we're going to turn your whole world upside down because we're amazing and we're smarter than you. It does not work. Like it really, and you see it all the time.
Yeah.
So going back to your, going over to your leadership, is that something, I mean, and I've talked to you only a couple times, but I've seen your approach. Is that something you learned? Is it something you realized with Monarch, or is it something in another part of your career where you realized you had to approach it sort of from that ground level for customers?
Yeah, this was something that predated Monarch, Jared, but I've learned it the hard way from the School of Hard Knocks, where we have developed technology sometimes and gone out and then realized that the farmer has generational insights. If the farmer is still doing farming, by definition, he's successful.
Right.
And he's successful very often because of his insights or her insights over and often gathered over generations, right? They know their land, they know their soil, they know their crop, they know their weather better than we can at this point in time and probably in the foreseeable future. And, honestly speaking, I've been out there on the farm standing there thinking, holy cow, I did not realize all these nuances. We have to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah.
So that's the School of Hard Knocks. And I often tell people I have a lot of lashings on my back to show for this. And I don't want to get them again. So let's go talk to the farmers who know best. Let's give them a tool instead of telling them how to do it. You know, give them a tool that they can use any way they want to. That's been our philosophy from day one. Our philosophy from day one is the farmer knows best. We need to be their partner in giving them the best tools, not in showing up on their farm and saying, hey, this is how you should do things, right? Yeah. Because if we take that approach, guaranteed to fail, we are probably missing out on 80% of their insights and knowledge that they have, right? And I've learned it the hard way, right? I've been on those farms where I looked like a complete idiot. Right.
Oh, I've been there.
Yeah, so
I've been there with my little iPad in my hand.
Yeah.
I had the answer and went, oh boy, I'm going to actually just walk around quietly for that.
Yeah, exactly. Ask questions and learn, right? Yeah, tell them how things do, right? So at Monarch, our philosophy is we have to give them the best tool and help them, right, in completing their operations. So that's always been our philosophy from day one.
Just circling back to the investors, do you think that approach, and I'm not asking this with any assumption, it's a genuine question. Do you think that approach, do the investors value that as well, that they're seeing how you're approaching the farmers and that they see it's more of a long-term solution? Or are they basically looking at the technology, the steps that you've made and that sort of thing? Or do they sort of look at the whole thing? Do you think that on the ground focus is a value add for them?
Definitely both components. They want to make sure that our technology is innovative and robust and is something that we have an advantage on because they're investing into our company. They want to make sure that it's not a technology that somebody else can develop in years, right? So we feel like, we do have a technology that's of value there. So the investors want to get some confidence on that side, Jared. But also, they want to make sure these days investors are quite savvy, especially investors investing in food and ag, because they've also gone through a number of historical investments where they understand the challenges of succeeding in farming. So they want to talk to the farmer. They're like, Monarch, your team is great. Your technology is great. We want to talk to the farmer and hear what their perspective on your technology is. So they look at both those things. Is the technology of value? Do we have a differentiator? What do the farmers think about your technology? And is there real value for the farmer? So they want, all of our investors have done that. They've talked to our farm partners directly and gotten that feedback and that confidence before they did the investment. But also, honestly, there's been a lot of investors who've said, we know farming is hard. Getting ag tech to be successful is very hard. So this is not our field to play in. And that's okay with us too.
Yeah, you want people that believe in what you're doing and that really understand the process of it as well. You don't want blind belief because it is going to be a long process.
Exactly, right? We want people who to join us, who believe in our team, who believe in our product, and who understand that this is a hard problem.
Yeah.
And very often, especially tech investors, you know, just like any other investor, they're looking at where they can put their money in and what their rate of return is in the shortest period of time.
Right.
So those are not our investors. So I'm very proud of the kind of investors we have. These are all investors with a long-term perspective. And they believe in the fact that our product can change farming for farmers around the world. And without that, you know, we don't have them join Monarch.
Yeah. What just before we wrap up the interview, you sort of touched on it earlier, yeah. But what's sort of the next from your perspective? And of course, you've talked a lot about listening to farmers and on the ground. But from what your perspective right now, where do you see what's the next couple years, next few years? Sure. What are your goals and targets and landmarks you need to hit?
Yeah, for us, it's about now, you know, fulfilling the faith that a lot of farmers have put in us. Mm-hmm. You know, by putting their reservations in. So we need to put tractors in their hands, allow their people to use it. So that's what the next 2 years is going to look like, and start doing that and also supporting the farmers. I'm under no illusion, and nobody on our team is under any illusion, that new technology is going to be challenging to deploy. So we're spending a lot of time on how do we support our early adopter farmers to the best ability possible, so that they don't feel the brunt of tech. Very often,
right,
Jared, in the past, ag tech has been about parachuting solutions, right? It's basically, you know, they just drop a solution off onto the field, tell farmers how amazing it is, and then that's that, right? And that's the reason why we have not seen these things we have not seen big changes.
Right.
What we want to do is we want to be there out on the farm with them. If something happens to our tractor, we want to support them through that whole process and make sure that their operations are not impacted. So our next 2 years is about putting our tractors into farmers' hands and supporting them as and when they have challenges, right? And we don't expect a smooth rollout, right? Yeah. We expect to work with farmers through it. So that's our philosophy. So yeah. That's a big ask. That's what we are prepping for.
Yeah. It's very exciting, and I really enjoy right from when I first talked to you, as I mentioned earlier, I saw that there was a genuine approach to try to develop this in a way that, yeah, it's not parachuting in, it's actually trying to integrate based on their needs, but bring a new technology. Yeah. And you're transforming an industry, yeah, but transform it with the farmers, not sort of in spite of them. And it's, you know, it's really great to see.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a lot of agriculture out here in BC, Vancouver, where I'm based. So, you know, we're trying to do a lot of part twos. Hopefully you'll come back on within the next year or so. And hopefully you'll have some units out on the ground in BC, and we can maybe we can do some on-site stuff. It'd be great to see to actually be standing beside the tractor during one of these interviews.
Happy to do that, Jared. And also, if any of your listeners are up for the challenge of what we're trying to do, whether you want to join the team or test out our technology, do reach out to us on monarchtractor.com. Mm-hmm. Check us out, you know, support our efforts. You know, farmers need everybody to kind of join the movement for us, yeah, to start changing the food ecosystem.
And we'll put plenty of links so that people can, you know, go. We'll put a link directly to your contact page as well, just so that people can sort of directly reach out, and even on your LinkedIn profile and things like that. So everybody will be able to reach out directly. Thank you. Thank you very much, Praveen, for coming on the show. It's very exciting. I know this is, we're sort of in, I feel like you're joining us at the end of the beginning.
Yeah.
Story. So it'll be very exciting to watch you.
Yeah, no, this is just the beginning, and thanks a lot for your support and having me on here.
Thank you, Praveen. Okay. Gowdy.
Yes.
All right, dude. Actually, my family has a little bit of land. I could get a tractor.
I feel like at the end of every episode, whether it's a tractor, a excavator, anything, you want it.
Yeah. I need one of the Rogan warehouse that I hear that he has, or like the Jay Leno with just the, like, and But yeah. I think I'll have to do a few more interviews before I get back. Okay, Gowdy, give a shout out to where people can like, follow, subscribe, and we will wrap up this episode of Crownsman Ag.
Absolutely. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. There's so many, so many episodes coming on there. And like, follow on Facebook, LinkedIn. We definitely focus a lot more on LinkedIn. So if you want to contact us, LinkedIn is the best way to go. You can also email us info@crownsman.com to, be part of the show or suggest someone that you think should be part of the show or a guest on the show. Again, info@crownsman.com.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Monarch Tractor and Praveen Benmetza. Sorry. My goodness. Thank you for joining the show. It's going to be a great story to follow. So keep following us, everybody. Keep suggesting guests. We love doing the show and we love featuring companies like Monarch who are really transforming industries. So thank you very much. See you on the next episode of Crownsman Ag.